Feisty independence was much more than I understood. How brave she was. What a dolt I was. This is hard to write, hard to admit. But some part of me always wondered if she had gone through with the abortion. That word was revolting to me. Yet my own shallow self-protection kept me from doing the right thing. Doubling the shame, I was in love with her. Looking back, my head must have been in a vise. I don't understand the boy who could let her go off on her own like that. I tried, 2 months later, to reach her. When her father came to the door, he had no idea who I was. She hadn't told him the name of the bastard who let her down. He said she was indefinitely away, traveling, that he didn't have contact information at the time. I didn't leave a note or number to pass on. I went on to law school, married a lovely local girl. We have no children. Maybe you care about these details, since your note says you are writing about Margaret. I followed her books. She was as remarkable as I expected. Since I have behaved abominably, I never wrote even to say what a marvelous writer she was. Once, when she gave a reading at the National Geographic in D.C., I attended. My seat was in the back, and she never knew I was there. Not to say I pined all my life, I didn't. Water under the bridge and all that. I obsess over the last line of her letter. Now you can have, and I don't mean this ironically, the honor too. You're a writer. So possibly, if this had happened to you, you could express what I can't. I know my limits. I did take another course of action. I hope it addresses the word honor, which Margaret obviously chose with care. A week after I received the letter, I called Edward Knowles in New York. He and his wife, Amanda, agreed to see me. I flew up the next day. They knew the birth mother's name, even had followed her career sporadically. Weeks before his death, they had told Colin about her in brief outline. He planned to get in touch with her. He wanted, they said, to know why she gave him up. I saw photos, a portrait, baby book, handsome boy. I read the school narratives on his performance, brilliant in everything but French. I saw his room, still intact, with a closet full of climbing gear, rackets, snorkel, and scuba equipment. Photo of a girlfriend who looked eerily like Margaret. In short, I was introduced to my son, and believe me, I was knocked over. The parents and their girl, also adopted, adored Colin. He deserved all the lavish love they gave. Ms. Rain, I will be humbled and saddened by this for the rest of my life. And yet, I am happy that I know of this boy who graced the earth for 16 years. Respectfully, Calhoun Green. Colin and I read it over and over. We're old to be new parents. Yes, Calhoun was weak, but he was 20, unformed. Margaret was 20 and had to form herself. From all I know, this is the defining event that shaped her life. The courage she had at that time resulted in the bravado of her adult life. The jilt, the betrayal, gave her a twisted sense of trust. The loss gave her eyes their old soul depth. That the worst had happened gave her an insouciance toward the future. I dig out what she wrote about her marriages. Two more underlines in the betrayal column. It's rather flip. Can't catch me. She wrote, I met Jamie Sonnenfeld the first night I got back from Europe. My father was entertaining clients and asked me to go. Jamie was the renegade lawyer in a Chicago firm. He took on the diciest cases, and according to Dad, was known to be tough and flamboyant in the courtroom. My kind of guy, I thought. I acquired a tough intestinal infection, along with acquiring Jamie over the summer. We married at his parents' mansion at Christmas. I was depressed over the faux Louis furniture and his mother's high, trilling laugh. She walked like a swan on land. The father looked like someone with his eyes open underwater. He said to me quietly, Jamie has bitten off more than he can chew. Jamie, center of attention. At the table, it was assumed he'd hold forth, and we'd second the motion. He was witty and smart, but we couldn't be. He turned out to be a narcissist who thought my writing was a temporary affliction like the persistent infection. Why recount the saga? Are unhappy marriages always alike? 18 months, curtains come down. Valete aci plaudite, as the Romans said. Farewell and applaud. Exit Margaret without a bow. My second marriage was announced like this. Margaret Ames Merrill wore a mauve silk suit when she became the wife of Henry Elton Hodges III yesterday at 5 p.m. at St. Joseph's Episcopal Church. Her pearls belonged to her late grandmother, also of the same name. Her hat was a white cloche, enlivened with a clutch of violets. Isn't that funny? The clothes taking total precedence over the groom, who's not mentioned again until paragraph 3. Predictive. Something always came first before Henry. We were wed for 2 months. We quarreled on our wedding night about train reservations, and he cuffed me on the ear. Shocked, I kicked him in the groin and got another room. We partly reconciled the next day and boarded the train for Florida. That did not go well either. Like Jamie, Henry was all about Henry. Maybe it was the era. I soon was on the phone to my father, who said what a fine family Henry came from. He desperately hoped that after my youthful troubles and mercurial personality, I was on the road to normal happiness, a state that also eluded him, since my mother absconded with the East Indian podiatrist she'd visited for bunions. Poor Dad. I separated, leaving Henry's personality in disarray, according to his psychiatrists. Both husbands were American WASPs. Both studied at Yale. My dad thought my independence was too much of a challenge for both men, but he was wrong. Their psyches were too weak for them to realize that my independence was a plus for them. After effects? The acceptance that my talents were not conspicuously domestic, matrimonial. Being alone became something I cherished and endured. Articles about me always say elusive, rigorous, independent. Not accurate. I'm just unwilling to submit to arbitrary control. I was back home soon, packing up again, this time for Europe, for good. I was finding American life to be, as H.L. Mencken said, a powerful solvent. Bye-bye. Not a word of connubial bliss. No French toast brought to her bed on a tray. No quotes from love letters. No, this hurt. All razor edge. Take no prisoners. Margaret hits it hard, down to the subcutaneous truth. Their psyches were too weak for them to realize that my independence was a plus for them.
Tangos.
They fell into the habit of sharing news over coffee in the morning. Family troubles are avoided, as are politics, too upsetting this early. Only book reviews, art openings, food articles, travel, general news, and of course, the small subjects. Who's shopping? Who's taking the cats for shots? And what was that website on ravioli with young nettles? Because they're springing up in the ditches. They've neglected messages for the past week. After Capri, the mornings are slow. They find it sweet to linger over a second cappuccino. Although Camille not only has work she wants to do, there are details to handle about her show. The gallery is simply for hire, with no staff involved. She must see to publicity, a few flyers around town, and an email to everyone she knows, hanging her work, and finding someone to sit in the gallery during open hours. Chris is due in this afternoon. Lighting briefly in San Rocco, he's booked at Luca and Gilda's hotel. In preparation for his arrival, Julia has begun to research places of interest near vineyards he's chosen in Sicily, and how a week-long swing around the island might happen. She's fallen in love with the leopard and hopes some remnant of that majestic and primitive Sicily still exists. Susan scrambles eggs. Mostly they've adopted the no-breakfast habit of Italians, but she's ravenous. The prospect of a morning of work in the garden makes her hungry in advance. Now everyone wants eggs and toast. Sunday mornings, with Aaron and the girls, newspaper spread out, the talk, the spills, Archie's predecessor as a puppy, sticky jam, windows fogged from the air conditioning, the blue velour robe she wore for years. She beats the eggs to a froth and whisks them into the hot pan. She serves the plates, then flips open her laptop. Molly! Her friend at Artful Dodge Antiques in Chapel Hill. Oh, good. She's proposing what they should focus on for the next container shipment. She reads this aloud. It would be a blast to acquire some of this together. I could pop over for a week and we could go grazing around Tuscany. Would that work for you? Say when. We'll catch up on all the news. Cheers, Molly. Oh, Lord. A week, Susan looks up. I guess it would be fun. It would be fun. What a coincidence. I just got this from my next-door neighbor in Savannah, Julia reads. Dear Julia, this will be a bolt from the blue. The girls are doing well. Bill and I, not. After 30 years, he is checking out of this marriage. With all your troubles, I didn't keep you posted about our decline. We attempted various strategies, weekends away. I won't bore you. Tango lessons seemed like a romantic option. I guess it was. How degrading to have to say that he is running off with a tango teacher. I'm not kidding. You can't make up this stuff. I wish you were near. Would you consider having me come visit for a couple of weeks this fall? I need to sort out and regroup. Everyone knows about Wade and the young woman. Is it true that she's PG? How did all this transpire in our lovely neighborhood? Let me know, and if it's not okay, I will certainly understand. Love, Allison. The tango teacher? They're tangoing off into the sunset. That is humiliating. Susan shakes her head. Fool! What is he thinking? Old roosters wanting to crow, Camille laughs. Oh, I know, not funny, but it is absurd. I guess you can recognize some things better when you're old. It is not going to work out with the tango teacher. It's just not. Oh, and this. More news. Julia reads.
Dear Julia, greetings from Budrum, where I'm reposing after twisting my ankle about 10 ways. I'll be fine, but am considering a respite before I continue my project. You said to come visit. Would you be open to a week or so? I might look for a short-term rental to organize my files and even begin to work on a long article. Are you all settled and happy there? All the best, Hugh.
Susan scrolls down and finds. Dear Susan, hope you remember us. We bought the historic Baskins house on Franklin from you. I've heard of your interesting life change from your colleague, Becca, who gave me your email. We are coming to Tuscany for a vacation, much needed. We'd love to stay with you for 2 or 3 days. Love to take you to dinner. It would be fun to catch up. Let me know if mid-June works for you. Arrivederci. Hope that's correct. Terry and Bob Moraine. Speaking of absurd, who are these people with this much gall? Catch up with what? I remember them as quite pleasant, but we never socialized after the sale. Whoa, they want to visit? Kit says you never lack friends when you have a vacation house in a great place. Words out. I'm surprised it took this long, Camille says. I've got one too, last week. Let me find it. Dear Professor Trowbridge, remember me from Art 101? I'm going to Europe with Amy and Rick, who were also in that class. It was a great class. Now we'll see the art in person. I hope this is still your email and that we can stop by and visit. If you could put us up, that would be awesome. We could help with the chores. We will be traveling all of July. Hope to see you. You're an awesome teacher. Dylan Schultz. Dylan was sweet. Never learned the difference between your and your, but he loved the Dutch landscapes. Oh, that life were so that you could just say to all these people, yes, come, doors open. We've shopped and cooked and cleaned and there are flowers in your room. Stay, stay as long as you can. Seriously, we need a policy. Something like good friends, 3 days. Family, fine, if we plan ahead. This is one of the tricky areas of living together. You might not want my guests or me yours. Susan is already answering Molly. I'm telling her, if it's okay with you, that she should come here for a couple of days and then we'll go on a road trip. That's fine. At least the house is big. We can refer most to an agriturismo. They're wonderful and they have pools. And we need to hone our skills at saying no, something none of us is good at. So, no to the students, no to the historic house owners. But, Julia, you'll let Allison come, won't you? And Hugh, oh yes, it would be lovely to see Hugh. Yes, Hugh. He'll be no trouble, and I'm sure after a couple of nights he'd be happy to move into town. But Allison? Not for 2 weeks, no way. She's my friend, but since I can't inflict a guest on you for that long, I'll blame it on you. You work at home, which is totally true. We all do. We are not just on vacation. The 3-day rule. Then she's going to love Luca and Gilda's hotel. Spa, cooking class, wine tastings. I'm sure she'll still have that bozo's credit cards. He's guilty as hell. He won't peep. We'll have her over, of course. We've slapped into shape some good guidelines. We're only inviting 3 guests, plus I think Charlie will fly over for my show. Rowan and Chris, but they won't be staying here. We'll be fine. Oh, wait, my daughters. Here, Eva says they can't stay away. We'll deal with that later. Susan reads on to more drastic news. Eva and Caroline are going to China to search for their birth parents. She wants to know where the adoption papers are and if I signed any privacy agreement. Don't worry, Eva assures her. We just want to know. We'll be taking over our DNA results. She responds immediately. Kara, Eva, do come. Anytime. Keep me posted, as there is much going on here and we'll have to juggle dates. You'll have to go to the safe deposit box for the papers from China. The key is in my right-hand desk drawer, and both your names are on the permission. I haven't looked at them in donkey's years. Password is wear tear. Let me know when you're going. I can get the house opened and aired. XXXX. Susan gathers the plates and loads the dishwasher. After all these years, why now? I've got to run. I'm getting a haircut. Chris wants to have a drink in town, then we're going to the hotel for dinner. Can I pick up anything in town? Thanks, Susan says. We can cook, my dear. Did it for years before we got you as a chef. I'm on a roll. Tonight I'll make my soon-to-be-famous Carolina meatloaf. Camille and I will revel in a quiet evening. Without a bump in the sky, still the flight from California feels endless. The car rental desk always crowded, and the drive out of the airport after 19 hours of travel not easy. Then 2 hours to San Rocco, radio blaring to keep him alert, with only one stop at an auto grill for a double espresso. At last, the serene turn into Hotel Santana. After kisses and hugs from Luca and Gilda and half the staff, Gilda orders pasta for him from the kitchen, which Chris devours. He starts to go over details for the Tuscany tour, but Gilda tells him that Julia already has nailed down every room selection, cooking school agenda, and pickup time. All he needs to do is show up. Julia will be here at 5. He already has asked Luca for a bottle of chilled Prosecco and flowers in his room. Romantic for days, he's packed a few votive candles. Suddenly, feeling pretty jet-lagged, he calls Julia.
I'm here. I'm waiting.
He showers, rests for 2 blessed deep sleep hours, then meets Julia in the terrace garden. She's wearing a filmy orange top and white pants. What has she done with her hair? It's longer, pinned up on either side. He sees her before she sees him, but when she does, her face lights. And then, as if she knows how much, she covers her face with her hands for a second. Laughing, she opens her arms as he opens his, and they crash into each other. You know you smile with your eyes.
And you smile with your whole body.
The last thing he wants to do is drive, but he longs to sit in the piazza with Julia on this spring evening and talk and talk. Gilda has planned a spectacular dinner, ravioli with borage, pheasant braised with dried berries and thyme, asparagus, and Gilda's silken panna cotta with wild strawberries. Violetta brings a tray with 2 flutes of Prosecco to their table. She kisses and hugs Chris, then Julia, whom she's kissed and hugged earlier in the day. Violetta serves bowls of olives and chips.
Ever think there's maybe a bit too much kissing around here?
Better than pulling out guns all the time, Julia laughs.
First toast of many.
Here's to our ventures. All kinds of adventures.
Chris clinks glasses with Julia.
Don't we love it all? Don't we love how the sun strikes the stones in the late afternoon? They have a sheen like wax.
He gestures around the piazza. Yes.
I'm always trying to figure out if there's some solstice or equinox marker, or if those Romans just sat out here drinking mead until they lost track of time. And let me right away toast you for making that trip to look for Lizzie. You were sweet to do that for me.
Let's hope Wade finds her. Let's talk about your book. About me heading off to Friuli with a van full of wild women on holiday. About Susan and Camille, Rowan, Archie, everything. Tell me everything.
5 months it's been. Carpe diem.
I get to bring the flowers.
What flowers go with paper doors? Susan asks.
Do you want austere and sculptural, or various and tumbling? Roses in glass bowls, or huge Renaissance extravaganzas?
They're arranging the gallery, moving the table to the wall by the door, wiping down dusty windowsills, leaving 4 chairs in an alcove where people can pause and visit. The paper doors will ring the walls, not crowded. Along the center of the room, 6 of Camille's favorites, suspended by transparent fishing line, will float in the air. Leo, who seems to be able to do anything, and Walter, who owns the frame shop, take measurements. Camille sees them looking at her work with a "what the hell is this" expression. She unpacks her doors, and Julia helps lay them along the floor the way she wants them hung.
I'm liking this do-it-yourself exhibit.
Camille holds up 2 doors to see how they like each other. Imagine just shipping your stuff off to New York and appearing when the caterers do.
I'm the caterer, and thrilled to be so. You're going to love my antipasti platters, which I am mixing up with a few southern goodies, such as ham biscuits and cheese straws.
I'll try not to be too nervous to notice, but I will be wearing my red velvet shoes. And Rowan is cutting his final classes to get here. Pretty gutsy, I think, since this is his last semester of teaching.
Susan takes 3 tablecloths out of a box.
Choose which one you want, and I'll make the flowers work.
She shakes out a cream bussati, makers of the traditional Tuscan linen, then a peach brocade from Grazia's stash, and a Renaissance moment red and gold jacquard.
Definitely the cream, Camille decides.
Susan already knew her choice, but had a small hope for the jacquard's drama.
Okay, now I'll have fun. Lunch break, let's go.
At Stefano's they order penne alla norma. Camille asks Julia,
what was it like to see Chris again? Maybe I'm feeling iffy about Rowan's arrival. You and I both sort of fell in with them quickly, but I'm thinking now, what if we look at each other and think, what was that about?
I doubt that. He's completely cool and arty. With Chris, this may sound unlikely, but we took up where we left off. We started talking about the tours and Sicily and his boy coming home to live. I feel like I'm already beginning to know his son, that everything will be quite natural. And if it's not, if we later wear out, that's not going to end my world. Maybe it's my damaged sense that this is a, I don't want to say posthumous relationship, that's too dire. But this revised life has to unfold in a serene and good way. He feels like a best friend, and I happen to find him crazy attractive, too.
That he is, Susan agrees.
She runs her fingers through her hair, raising the spikes.
Not that I have run into anyone other than Ricardo, and I think he's gay without even admitting it to himself. So this is theoretical, but it seems like you're both ferreting out what love is at this stage.
She laughs wickedly.
Love in the time of chin hairs and vaginal moisturizer. They start laughing so loud that everyone turns their way. Anyway, you sound like you've totally got it straight. The relationships are nothing like what any of us has known before. That passion that makes you overlook flaws, the arc of a long marriage, the comfortable complacency that sets in, the decades and decades where being a part of something seems big and whole, but also splits you into twos and threes. She slaps her hands against each other. Over and done. Now it's seize the day. People who like to be side by side, as you once said, Julia. Didn't you say you imagined you and Chris walking down a foreign street arm in arm? I love that. Did I? You're so good and succinct, Susan. But does it make you feel, what, lonely? That we have these part-time men and you haven't met anyone? Well, there's Ricardo. He's interesting. About saffron and roses and translation and the inner workings of the Vatican? You have a lot in common. Are you sure he's gay? I don't care, truly. He likes to have lunch and dance at parties, and he's passionate about literature and gardens. He's a friend, a good one. Sex? Actually, he doesn't appeal to me that way. I seem to want to throw all my, as you know, considerable energy into my interests. For now, anyway. I'm glad you found at least great dates and maybe soulmates. Don't worry about me. I'm way past thinking I need a bicycle built for two. You all having dessert? Julia takes her at her word. Camille shrugs. Paper doors, she thinks. Always opening. Pearls. Rowan rents a Fiat 500X. Surprisingly ready and waiting with his name on it. He heads north, stopping only at a wine shop in Urte, where he once spent a few days, and next at his apartment on the edge of San Rocco. He made excellent time. He opens the shutters, letting in sudden strong light. Although he knows it's constantly rented, the place looks untouched since his exit. His landlady, Mariana, scrawled, Benvenuto, on a piece of paper sack. What a sweetheart. She left fruit, bread, cheese, and coffee. He showers and changes, putting on the green sweater Camille gave him for Christmas, then drives straight to Villa Assunta. He's bringing a suitcase full of paper doors exhibition catalogs, letter-pressed, with one of the doors that Matilda sent him in a high-res photo on the cover. She wrote the intro, staking large claims for the brilliance and originality of the work. For Camille's birthday, Rowan made something else, too, a hand-sewn book for guests to sign. The papers are those he made at the Bottega, with a blue, heavier stock cover embossed with Camille's initials and a painted design of a mosaic hand. Immensely pleased, he feels, to offer her these tokens. He's an hour earlier than expected. No one's home. He walks around the transformed garden. The hillside behind the house is blousy with hyacinths and the pheasant-eye narcissus his mother loves. Farther up, poppies and unknown other white and yellow wildflowers rampage along the road to Kits. Lemon pots line the drive, a seigneurial touch, and the pergola is dripping with white wisteria. Camille told him about Susan's spaces created out of the junk shed Limonaya. Since the doors are all open, he peers in. What a great place for a fine printing press. Light. He has a flash of working there side by side with Camille. Sturdy stone floor, great for the heavy printing press. As of today, he's sprung from his teaching.
Freedom is a powerful aphrodisiac. What great books there are out there for him to publish. After his brutal marriage in his 20s and the two ultimately unsatisfying relationships after that, he's optimistic about his feelings for Camille. She's his age. He's not wanting a younger woman. Too problematic. And if too young, what a drag to force yourself to remain enthusiastic over things you really no longer care about. And the powerful desire they develop for children. He feels a stab of regret for the two difficult children he did not save, could not, and another stab of anger at their mother. Camille remains young because she's starting over. She has all the excitement and trepidation of a 20-year-old, an excitement he feels today as well. She gets his references. She thinks and reads, reaches out to touch the paper. She's still damned attractive. An image rises of her breasts, full and surprisingly tipped with small pink nipples. Late, but he feels sure he's found unfettered love for the first time. There, at the end of the Limanaya, Camille's easels are already set up. The middle section houses Susan's garden tools and pots. He leans to read the tabs on the biodegradable trays where she's started seeds. Cosmos, Lysianthus, basil, trailing nasturtiums, echinacea. In Julia's charming outdoor dining room, she's already set the table for Camille's birthday celebration tonight, with a vibrant tablecloth of chevrons, a green tureen spilling with yellow hyacinths and wands of quince. These southern women, a genius for hospitality, or maybe better named, for friendship. He won't tell that he shooed one of the thieves' cats, Ragazzo, off the table. An Alfa Giulietta, blood red, pulls slowly down the driveway, and a tall blonde man unfolds himself. Charlie. Rowan knows immediately. His smile, like hers, a default, and there more often than not. The same high patrician nose. Hey, man, you must be Rowan. He's walking forward with his hand out. Rowan smiles back. Great you could get here for the show. Looks like no one's around. And really great to meet the Wonder Boy. What a fine-looking son. And an artist. You too, man. I spoke to Mom from the Autostrada. They'll be back any minute. Some last-minute hitch with hanging things from the ceiling. But I think they charmed the gallery guy into letting them. She said to go in. The key is under a pot near the kitchen door. Charlie felt a pang for his dad. Who's this hip older guy stepping in, maybe bonging his mom? But he seems straight up and present. Charlie knows about the fine printing and wants to hear more. There are 10 pots around the step, but Rowan guesses right the first time.
At least it's not the doormat. So much for thieves being fooled, huh?
I'm upstairs across from Susan. Charlie starts up with his bag.
I'm not staying here. I have my same apartment from last year on the edge of town.
Rowan looks around the kitchen, thinking of the lumpy velvet sofa at his place the night he and Camille came back from Bologna. How much has changed? The night with the stolen jewelry, when he held Camille while she slept, cried, cursed, and slept. What a magnificently lived-in house. Now even lighter inside. Then he notices that all the bushes obscuring windows have been cut back. He can't imagine the three of them not here. He calls up to Charlie.
You want a drink? I stopped in Orte and bought some wine and a couple of cheeses. Hope they pass muster with Julia.
Charlie has a quick shower, combs his wet hair straight back, and bounds down, buttoning his shirt. At the same moment, Camille flings open the door,
meeting him at the bottom of the stairs with a big, dancing hug. Oh, you! She sees Rowan in the doorway and grabs him, too, still dancing. You're both here!
Yeah.
And Chris will be here soon. He's picking up some last-minute things. Charlie, can you grab those last two bags out of the car? Rowan, let's put on some music. Susan and Julia walked from town. They're trying to clock 3 miles a day. Julia holds up a handful of wild asparagus.
We'll see. It looks stringy. This may taste like yawn.
I'm not able to go to the pre-show dinner at Villa Assunta tonight. From my study window, I can hear commotion below, snatches of laughter. Who's playing Heart and Soul on the piano? Then the speaker blaring out Pink Martini and Buddha Bar, some of my favorites. Colin will go to the dinner. Is he glad to get out of the house of confinement? And they invited others. Ricardo, Nicola, and Brian. Not sure who else. Under house arrest, I am sending a birthday gift. Even though Camille says she'll never buy jewelry again, she won't be able to resist Margaret's grandmother's pearls I found in the suitcase. I fancy that Margaret would be pleased to know of Camille's resurgence, an important birthday, and on the eve of her show. I want to celebrate both. Tomorrow I am allowed to go to the opening. Colin got the doctor's permission to drive into the center, closed to traffic, letting me out at the door. Inside, there's a chair for me. I am purely an invalid, but thus far it's working. No further alarms. The little charmer has calmed in his, her churnings. Seems to sleep when I do. Thank you. Stay put. Grow. Hang on by your nails if necessary. I've only seen 5 of Camille's miniaturist works. They're nothing like anything I've ever seen. I sense that she has an instinct that they're fine, but not the confidence to believe such a truth. Her paper doors look mysterious, a mystery wrapped in a mystery. They remind me of Emily Dickinson. Who could imagine that a New England spinster, hiding herself in her family home, had such piercing, abstract, and hidden motives? Where did her work come from? From girlhood. It was there all along, but given no exit. No gas ever thrown on the fire. Emily was more obvious in hiding her talent, those rolled fascicles of poems in a drawer. But a right parallel to a woman from down south, decades later, pushing back her gift, canvases literally stuck in the attic. Circumstances, for sure, different, but across time, a woman hiding her passion, even self-suppressing. Late one night in Capri, Camille told me about her one fling in a New York loft that messed up her head. Her strict parents always told her to color within the lines, stay close to home, take no risk. Venture? Gain nothing. The family motto seems to have been, you'll be sorry. She grew up constantly being herded. Then that one crazy night and bingo. Oh, were they right? She was as pregnant as she would have been if she'd slept with dozens of men. Deeply shamed and terrified, she felt the heavy letter A around her neck. She wanted her life with Charles. What she never expected to do, she did. The ugly word, abortion. Also a big A. The guilt, the relief, the sickening feeling of betrayal, all seized her whole body. Charles never knew. She invited her mother to visit for 2 weeks. Her mother, who constantly said, I wouldn't, don't, be careful. Camille disliked the sight of her paints.
We're excited to see the exhibit, to see the work reflected off her face, how she sees the doors with everyone else looking at them. No matter what the work, some will stare blankly. At least no one will say their children could have done better. But this is Italy, with a long and wide cultural life, where the worker who finished ninth grade hums Aida while he unblocks the toilet. The liceo students catch references to Persian miniatures and Renaissance sculpture, and many others simply will respond to the intricacy and beauty hanging before them. I wish I were at their table tonight. But I'm happily home, too, still grateful that nothing terrible happened. I relish time with my pillows, my books scattered around, and the delicious prospect of Colin bringing home news of the happy evening in their limonaia and, best, a promised tray from Julia. He wanted to go, but wanted to stay at home, too. His stone room, now completed, draws him to his design table, where the exciting Florida project starts to take shape. The firm has been hired by the city of Key West to create a sunset-watching pavilion with a cafe and bookstore on one side and a restaurant on the other, truly the best project ever for Colin. I told him about the song all Italians know, Una Rotonda sul Mare, inspired by the round dance pavilion built in the Adriatic town of Senigallia. Hearing the song and having a glimpse at the round white building in the shallow waves makes you long to have been a heartbroken Italian teenager dancing there under the moon. Colin is romantic enough to fall for such crooning now and then, and he's inspired by the architecture. No way Key West can build in the waves. Now he plays the song as he works. We know this project means we spend a lot of time in Florida as soon as ground breaks. Colin's late. Maybe I can't wait up for the delectable tasting plate. I read a few Neruda odes to artichokes, socks, potatoes, his exalted ordinary things. He gets away with lines like, I want to do with you what spring does with the cherry trees. He always puts me in a soporific state. I let the book fall to the floor. The opening of paper doors. Mathilde surprised Camille. She had not said she was inviting artists from all over Tuscany, gallery owners from Florence, critics, and restoration colleagues. Camille thought she was bringing a few friends. From my chair, I watch waves of chic, artistic people arrive, streaming in among the local crowd. The whole of San Rocco is here, spilling out into the street. Party time! Chris circulating with the wine bottles, Julia with plates of delectable bites. Everyone circles the room, leaning in to examine the paper doors, gesturing to companions and talking with animation. Camille stands off to the side with Rowan and Charlie. She looks quite wild-eyed, gazing around the room as though something is expected of her, but she doesn't know what. That son of hers, grinning and beaming, is super looking. My age, give or take. I wonder if any of those young fashionista artists behind him could turn his head. My impression is that he puts up with a wife hard to please. Mathilde walks arm in arm with a man in an American suit. He's nodding. She's talking. The gallery heats up. Someone opens the front windows. Susan passes more Prosecco. Julia and Aneta bring out platters for the table, and like a sailboat coming hard about, the weight of the room shifts toward the food. Gilda and Nicola sit with me, thrilled for Camille, too. A small gallery in a small town, but the energy vibrates. Camille
Her red shoes.
She owns this show. Head up, hair clipped back, classic, like Grace Kelly. And a fitted white dress with cleavage. 70, looking good. I'd like to stand up and cheer. Margaret's long loop of pearls looks stunning on her. Colin becomes the court photographer. He arranges groups with their arms around each other, individual shots, and close-ups of the work. Camille smiles as widely as she possibly can. I wonder if anyone has told her yet that Sandro Chia is here. I know she admires his work. Mathilde brings him over and introduces me. Camille will be thrilled that you've come.
My honor, he replies. This is quite extraordinary, what's going on here. Signora Rain, I also admire your poetry.
Surely, Mathilde prompted him. He's pulled away by a Florentine artist I recognize. He looks as though he should instead model for Dolce and Gabbana. I throw my arms around Mathilde. I love you for this. You've worked a miracle for Camille. She's floating on a big cloud. What a thrill for all of us.
Good things are going to start happening to Camille very soon. There are two critics here, and...
Julia holds out a platter to them, and Mathilde doesn't finish her sentence. Fantastic. You're getting a star in your crown, my friend. Colin takes a picture of us. Mathilde, looking like a pre-Raphaelite goddess. Me, looking like a large biscuit. Everyone stays and stays. Still, Julia rolls out the platters of artichoke fritters, crostini, skewers of prosciutto and melon. Everyone eats. But the Italians peer suspiciously at the cheese straws and biscuits. Charlie loads his plate with them and urges Rowan to try a taste. As the room finally starts to thin out, I take Colin's arm and stroll around, taking in each paper door. Let's buy one. Where's the price sheet? We could hang it in your new studio. Colin crosses to the guest book and comes back.
No price sheet. Just a notice by the book that says to contact Mathilde after the opening. What's that all about?
This is all new to Camille. I wonder if she doesn't want to let go of them yet. Which would you choose, if you could choose? We stop in front of the one I saw the Florentine man in the tight suit eyeing earlier. We both love this. A series of four waxing moons, beginning with the slightest crescent. They're the thin blue-white of mother's milk on a sapphire background. The stacked papers invite the hand. I'd like to take this off the wall and hold it. The shafts of minute writing appear to run backward, and intricate geometric designs in slate and white run around the border.
The floor of some church, Colin says, not sure which one. Maybe on the island of Murano?
No idea. But there's something arresting about all of these. They send your mind in many directions, not just one. I'm remembering Galileo's drawing of moons. Camille comes over and hugs us. What I can't believe, even more than this show, is these. She holds up the pearls. How could you give these to me? That and all this? Can you imagine? I cannot believe this is happening to me.
Oh, believe it. You deserve this.
Colin gives her two big kisses. We're overwhelmed. Really, Camille, this is astounding work. Is it possible to buy this one? I ask. Absolutely not. I'm giving it to you when the show ends. No. You can't start giving away your paintings. You're a pro now. You're supposed to be saying, show me the money. You're coming to dinner? Stefano is saving us a table. I think Julia has ordered another birthday cake. when I'd really like to let this slide by without notice. With this many people in town, I'm glad we reserved. Oh, I can't go. I'm only out on a brief pass. Colin's going to take me home now. You all have a fabulous evening. They did. Nicola's daughter, home from school in England for spring holidays, agreed to gallery sit for the week. She has a stack of books and plans to catch up on reading assignments between hellos to visitors. Since she can't start until Monday, Camille and Charlie spend Sunday together in the gallery, a treat. Camille cannot remember having this much time with him. She turns on the lights while he walks across the piazza to bring back cappuccino and pastries.
I get to have the place to myself, he says, walking slowly from one painting to the next. What's damned amazing is how you stepped out.
You've absorbed all the art here and let it soak into your brain. What's on these pages is traceable to your days here, but combined in ways that are totally you. Thanks. And it feels that way. But working alone, you never know if what you do is good or rubbish. You think, but some nasty critical voice is always carping, always asking, who do you think you are?
No, forget that. You are so way beyond your parents.
That's the voice you internalized. Didn't they always put the lid on any risk?
Don't try this, you'll regret that.
You have teaching to fall back on. Your husband needs you,
on and on.
They were afraid for me. She's remembering how intimidated she was in New York and what that got her. The stupid night in the oh-so-cool loft.
Let them roll around in their graves. You're rocking it, Mom. You know it.
Charlie now teaches part-time at the university. Instead of the class taking away from his painting, as he always assumed, he feels stimulated by the studio workshops and more motivated with bright students around who talk, breathe, and sleep art. He tells Camille that he's also much happier with Lara, maybe not as focused on her dissatisfactions. And there are fewer of those, anyway, now that they're living in Camille's house.
What a luxury space is.
The three of us were too tight in our house. Neighbors breathing down our necks when we lit up the barbecue.
Ingrid loves Spit Creek. She and her friends splash around, catch turtles, act like the kids they still are. Sometimes she goes down to Dad's cyclamen patch and reads on his bench.
Dad, by the way, his voice slows. Would be completely blown away by this show. Camille nods, silent for a moment, then says, the sad thing is, if he were still with us, there would be no show. I've been spinning my own web here. Yeah, you're right.
This comes out of Italy. Italy brought it to you.
Not to say I wouldn't prefer that things had just gone on as they were. She trails off suddenly, disloyally, wondering if that is true. But maybe we would have found a way to shake up the norm. A big question, no answer.
What about Rowan? I like him.
Yes, he's thoughtful, solid. You'll adore his work. He's quite well known in the esoteric fine print world. Julia, Susan, and I were just talking about this late kind of love, or affair, or whatever it is. We decided that carpe diem should reign. I think I'll just go where I feel guided. No one's in any rush. He can't think what to reply, and says the rather expected.
They, too, deserve every bit of happiness that's out there.
For Charlie, the idea of sex at 70 is disorienting, but
but he has a hunch it's happening. This late blossoming, explosion, more like it, a miracle for his mom.